Earlier in the show, we examined one of the major rulings issued by the Supreme Court in D.C. this past week. We returned to the court to review another one of their rulings, which certainly was a win for the Right to Life movement. The case was NIFLA versus Becerra. And with us now to explain the importance of this ruling is the National Director of Preach for Life, Father Frank Pavone. Thank you for being here today, Father.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And learn more about Father Pavone's organization, priestsforlife.org. So give us the background on NIFLA versus Becerra. What was the basis of it?
The basis of it was an attempt by some in the abortion industry to actually shut down the work of pro-life pregnancy centers. There are a couple of thousand pregnancy centers across America that provide alternatives to abortion, counseling and financial, medical services, adoption services, etc. Now, why would the abortion industry want to shut them down? Well, because every time a pregnancy center saves a life, the abortion industry loses business. So California passed a law telling the licensed pregnancy centers that they had to post a sign advertising abortion. And if that sounds absurd, you know, it's as absurd as telling Alcoholics Anonymous they have to post a sign advertising the local liquor store. These centers exist to lead people away from abortion, and California tried to force them to advertise it. Long story short, the Supreme Court said this violates the free speech rights of the people who run those centers. And that was a tremendous victory, because had it not been decided that way, all kinds of other states would have followed suit to try to ultimately to try to close down these pregnancy centers.
Well, there are other states who have similar laws in place, if I understand correctly.
Well, there have been challenges for a good number of years. In fact, some states and even some local cities. The city of Baltimore tried this. The city of New York. Different nuances in the form of argument that they made. But basically, they've been trying to clamp down on these centers. And fortunately, you know, the centers have won in all of these more local skirmishes. The centers have been vindicated. Their speech rights have been vindicated. And now the court has really set a very important precedent. It's a case of compelled speech. You know, we understand freedom of speech. We usually think of it as I can say what I want to say. But it also means I don't have to say what I don't want to say. And that's what the case was here, that they were forcing them to. The government was trying to change the content of the speech of those running these centers. The government can control the, you know, time and manner. They can say, oh, you have to speak over here, stand over here, not over there, this many decibels, this your sign can't be any bigger than this. But it has to be content neutral. They can't tell you that you may or may not speak your convictions.
And if nothing else, it is one-sided, too, because the California law did not mandate Planned Parenthood to inform their people that there were pregnancy resource centers located somewhere else in that particular city.
Well, that's right. You know, the court knocked this law down on a number of bases. It says it didn't satisfy the highest test for infringing on First Amendment rights, which is called strict scrutiny. But then it said it doesn't even satisfy the lower test. And one of the reasons for that was what you just pointed out. They said, look, you know, this is unfairly targeting the pro-life centers. You know, if the state of California really wants that badly to advertise its low-cost abortions, well, ask all the businesses to advertise it, or, you know, ask all the health centers to put a sign up. You know, why are you focusing just on these pro-life centers? And, of course, that undermines their argument that this is such a compelling state need to begin with.
Just to point out, give an example of just how outrageous the California law is, and in Hawaii, where a similar law existed, if the law was upheld and continued to allow to be forced upon the pregnancy resource centers, there was one center in Hawaii which is located in a church, which would then have to promote abortion.
And that's where this, which is this NIFLA case, which is essentially a free speech case, also very much touches freedom of religion. And again, had the court not decided the right way, you would have now had churches implicated as well in this kind of oppressive scheme by the government. You know, I just want to say, I've been working with NIFLA for 25 years. These are some of the best people in the world, selfless volunteers. The pregnancy centers serve hundreds of thousands of people. In fact, over a million people every year. And it was just a very great personal satisfaction to see them win this case. We at Priest for Life had a friend of the court brief in this case as well, and we're just very, very gratified that the court went the right way.
Father Frank Pavone, who's the National Director of Priest for Life, priestforlife.org is the website, and listening to Issues and Ideas. And staying on the Supreme Court for a moment, because in the aftermath of this ruling and the retirement announcement of Justice Kennedy, there is, well, hope on the pro-life movement and concern on the pro-abortion movement that a change in the court could encourage a representation of Roe v. Wade. Because when you think about it, Roe v. Wade was 72-73 decision. The medical technology and science was far below what we have as far as knowledge of what's going on in the womb and with the baby and the infant today. Is there a legitimate reason to expect an organization to step forward and try to retry Roe v. Wade in some way, shape, or form?
Well, pro-life attorneys have been strategizing on that and continue to do so now. And there are a number of cases that have been percolating at the lower court levels that could one day soon be create a direct challenge to Roe. But we've got to be smart about how we do this. And that right now is, you might say, an accelerated priority in the pro-life movement. And attorneys are meeting about that. And we're trying to figure out with them what is one has to know before presenting a case to the court, you know, what are the justices looking for and what's going to persuade them? And you study all their past decisions because, as you know, there have been many decisions on abortion by the Supreme Court subsequent to Roe versus Wade. And just about all of them have weakened Roe v. Wade. All that's left of it is what they call the central holding. You know, abortion is still legal and the state cannot prohibit it. But the Roe v. Wade has been very much weakened. And now what happens, Justice Kennedy was no friend of ours on abortion, although occasionally he would rule the right way. But now we have a chance to replace a question mark vote with a very solidly reliable pro-life vote. And this could mean, this could give those that are battling in the lower courts on pro-life issues much more confidence to bring it before the Supreme Court.
And not being a lawyer, but certainly have talked to enough over the course of doing this show, I would imagine that if you go before the Supreme Court, you want the case to be a range that would be broad enough to achieve a goal, but not too wide where if you lose, you're going to eliminate another swing of the pitch.
Yeah, exactly. And that is always a calculated risk. And that's why, you know, it's got to be just the right case. And, you know, one of the things Roe v. Wade said, besides the point you just made about, you know, we know better now who the unborn child is than we have at any time in human history. So the question of who this child is, but also the question of, you know, what does abortion do to the women? You know, one of the things we do at Priest for Life is the Silent No More campaign, and you see the women and the men and other family members actually talking about how devastating abortion is. And in our nation's history, you know, in the past, when the Supreme Court has reversed itself on basic constitutional questions, it has often been because what was originally thought to benefit a particular group of people was later shown to harm them. And we see this when it comes to basic questions like segregation, for example, and the rights of labor versus capital. The Supreme Court has reversed itself many times. And again, one of the elements there is, were the people we were trying to help actually hurt by the so-called right that we gave to them? And we have quite a bit of evidence now of the harm, the damage done to the very women that Roe versus Wade claimed to be helping. I think that's going to be an element of whatever case ultimately comes before the new, more pro-life court. Now, many will say also that we need yet another replacement even after this one, because the court is still pretty much divided down the middle, and which way it goes in the calculated risk that you just articulated, you know, suggests that, you know, you don't want to have a majority of just one on your side. You want to get the court to the place where you can count on six or seven votes, you know, rather than just five. So it's a big question, got to be approached intelligently, and I would add with a lot of prayer.
He is the National Director of Priest for Life, priestforlife.org. Father Frank Pavone, thanks so much for being here today.
Hey, you're most welcome. Thanks for having me.